Hello everybody, this is John Duquesne from Dragon Door Publications for the Pavel and Dan John Easy Strengths Teleseminar. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm very excited today to have both authors on this call, Dan John and Pavel Tsatsouline, both of them leading experts in the world of strength. Of course, Pavel has been a lead author for Dragon Door for some 14 years. Dan John has been a very influential strength writer over many years as an accomplished coach, a world champion in discus, and is remarkable for his coaching background. I think the first thing that we'd like to discuss is how Dan and Pavel decided to collaborate. Dan or Pavel, how did you come to decide to collaborate on Easy Strength?
Well, John, you know, Dan and I met at a Charles Taylor's event, and we just immediately hit it off. We realized that our training philosophies were an excellent fit. And we started learning from each other right from the start. So the Easy Strength is something that appeared as a result of that meeting several years later. Dan, would you care to add?
Well, it was odd. I mean, a lot of people don't know that I started reading Pavel's work. Jason Keane had gone to one of Pavel's workshops, and I believe he charged an astounding $25 for it back in Minnesota. And he wrote up a little review on this thing called the Introwebs, which I'd only been on for... it's got to be 98, 99, and it was one of the first things I read, and I thought immediately, I like this guy, because you tied into a lot of the things we in track and field had believed, and it was like, oh, and then some of the concepts of tension, and so, and then, Tyler, you were on this, I think it was called Amaross, a forum, and I used to come in, I was too shy back then to post on forums, and I'd read your posts, and I think I sent you one time a collection of my cut and paste that I had. And so when we finally met, it was just kind of a natural fit. The two of us had real similar concepts that, you know, strength's a lot simpler than people make it. And it's all, and here we go. And a couple of years later, and here we are.
Yes, Dan, one of the
really
things
came out, this I'm book sorry. Really came out. It's, you know, we're sort of jamming. If two musicians were jamming together, this is what we did. Of course, I know nothing about music, but this is the best analogy I could find.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened. And it's strange because sometimes I feel like we finish each other's sentences, and we're like an old married couple. You know, it's like, strength.
Don't forget to take out the garbage, Dan.
I'm on that. Give me 10 minutes. Yeah.
Well, Dan and Pavel both have tremendous senses of humor, and it's one of the reasons I love them both dearly. Dan came out with a kind of nice joke about how this book came to be written, how it started to be organized, and Dan suggested the tagline that an Irishman, a Russian, and a Brit walked into a bar. And apparently the Irishman ordered a Guinness, the Russian five shots of vodka, which was just to get him going, and then the Brit settled for a tankard of lukewarm, pale ale. And then they sat down to discuss the creation of what has become a landmark strength title. One of the problems, as it were, for a book like this was Dan and Pavel have just talked about how much they have in common, yet at the same time, they are very, very different in their backgrounds and have very different writing styles. They have a lot of very, very different experience. And yet there was some commonality there. There was a very good sense of communication. Gentlemen, would you like to talk about what we kind of came up with as a structure that would work for the creation of a book like this?
Well, John, that was really your idea. The Dinner with Andre model was your idea, and I think it's a terrific idea because while the philosophy and the content that then I have very much, you know, they're totally in sync, our style of delivery is very different, and trying to mesh our two styles together into one, it would have been a pretty ugly hybrid. So this is where John comes in, and please tell the story, John.
Well, thank you, Pavel. I mean, it was one of my favorite movies of all time is by Louis Malins called My Dinner with Andre. And as Pavel just referenced, I actually sent My Dinner with Andre to Pavel, and he told me he watched it five times, loved it. And it is, it's two gentlemen from extremely different backgrounds with very, very different personalities. One is relatively conservative and relatively quiet in his lifestyle. The other is a very, very flamboyant, highly creative, and kind of mystical gentleman. And they're very, very good friends, but they are coming at life from a very different viewpoint. The whole film is just them sitting down to dinner and holding forth on what life is really all about for the two of them. And it's a very, very intriguing, moving, and generally successful film. So this did look like a very worthwhile approach to take, an unusual approach, for a book that was on strength training, which was to have these two very distinct personalities with very distinct backgrounds basically sit down together and talk the book out. And it's a very profound conversation about the ramifications of strength training. One of the things Dan just commented on that's an interesting statement was that strength is simple. And yet at the same time, as Pavel is has done in a masterly fashion, strength is a skill that has many, many aspects to it, and there's great theory behind it. So yes, it's very simple, and yet there's a lot of complexity. As we all know, the complexity often overwhelms people, and they easily go off track. And we see that in so many different disciplines when strength training is applied to any athletic endeavor. One of the things that that Dan points out in particular, and Pavel backs him up with in Easy Strength, is the extent to which many coaches of athletes get off track. I thought it would be good for us. There's a lot of do-nots in Easy Strength, as much as there is do-thises, if I can coin a term. And I thought it would be very helpful if we kind of focused in on, say, the top five mistakes that you gentlemen see strength coaches making with their athletes. We could, of course, probably fill more than just the volume of Easy Strength with mistakes people make, but very valuable, I think, and there's a lot of good material in Easy Strength that does point out some of these top mistakes that people make. So perhaps, Dan, do you want to lead off with the first and perhaps the greatest mistake you see strength coaches making when they approach an athlete?
Yeah, sure. I mean, okay.
Don't want to throw you a curveball or anything.
No, it's a great. I mean, I'm working with this team right now. It's like, and they've all come to the same conclusion. It's like, how do we get away from the message? How did we get so? And like I tell everybody, you know, the joke in some fields is in science is that 50% of what we know is wrong. We just don't know what 50% that is. In weightlifting, we know what works. We've always known what works. Okay, just seriously, Pavel, I mean, don't buy my book. Buy Power to the People. Because really, if you just bench press and deadlift 5 days a week, if you just military press and deadlift, you will be strong, you know. But what happens is that we're constantly, you know, and every cliche that's been around the world, you know, the grass is greener on the other side. Everybody's looking for the next wave, another cliche right there for you. People don't have the confidence to go, okay, we said we're going to do this. This is who we are. This is our mission. You know, and I talk about that a lot lately on my blog about being mission-centered or, you know, in goals, a little bit different. But the idea that, hey, my job is, say, a football coach. We're supposed to go out there and, you know, be a winning football program 7 of 10 years, and, you know, when we can win a state championship. That's a good 10-year mission. So then why do we just go out and spend $700 on a jump machine, $7,000 on a machine that will increase our vertical jump 3 inches because we like the sales presentation? Well, why don't we just stick to the basics, stick to the mission? And that's the hard part. the joke that we always make is that the best program is the one that is the next one you're going to start. The best program is the one that you do. And so what happens, John, and I'm sure Pat will agree, everybody is always so busy looking for the little gem that they miss the fact that they're standing on a gold mine. And that's the thing I see, John. It's the courage to do what you say you will do. I mean, I live by that phrase. You know, you say in your program, you know, we need to squat, bench press, and deadlift. That's great. Well, then do it. Yeah, those guys over there are doing this. But you bought all this equipment. You took all these classes. Just follow it up. Finish it. Do what you say. And I think that's the secret behind this thing we call either the 40-day workout or the easier strength workout, is all I'm asking to do is pick 5 exercises and just do them. Do them for 40 workouts, and then get back to me. And amazingly, when you do the same thing for 40 times, you get a little stronger. So John, I know that's a long-winded response, but the biggest issue is that people are always looking somewhere else, you know. Home is where the heart is, you know. All the great traditions always come back to saying the same thing we're saying in this book. It's just be who you say you are, okay? You can find the same things in Leviticus, okay? Be who you say you are, okay? Enough pontificating for me for now. I wish you rest.
Thank you, Dan. So kind of to summarize what I would say, I would say you were putting as the kind of number one mistake is lack of focus and lack of application and lack of following through on what's known to truly work. Would that be a fair summary?
Follow through. Like when people try, you know, they want to be an Olympic lifter and they decide to invent something new. Until you snatch 462, there's no new ground yet. When you snatch 467 pounds, then maybe you have to start looking for some new thing to do. Exactly right, John. Follow through. Finish it. Yeah. Take care of it. Yeah.
Pavel, do you want to give another example of one of the critical key mistakes that you see strength and conditioning coaches make when they're considering training an athlete of any particular kind?
Yes, John. That mistake is forgetting that strength is the master quality. Professor Matveev, one of the foremost Russian sports scientists, you know, happens to be the father of periodization, he said that strength is the foundation for all the other physical qualities, and people are forgetting that. Fashion comes and goes, and like right now, what are the fashionable things right now? Right now, it's the corrective exercise and the metabolic conditioning. A little earlier, it was functional training, which is also right now keeps going on. Then there's going to be some other thing. And it doesn't mean that metabolic training or correctives or what have you have no value. They obviously do, but strength is the mother quality. It's kind of entertaining watching people who are very weak, doing a lot of repetitions with lightweight, trying to develop strength endurance. Stu Bakari, RKC, who is a strength coach to some top UFC fighters like Joe Lauzon, he has a great saying. You know, before worrying about strength endurance, why don't you build some strength to endure? And that really sums up that particular mistake. Why did strength coaches and athletes step away from strength development? Well, probably because they have been baffled by somebody, by some of the shiny things like functional training, and possibly because they heard some stories about elite athletes taken out of context. If you talk to Dan, you will find out that he did his best throwing when his back squat at 400 pounds. At some point, Dan decided to take his back squat to 600, which he did successfully, and his throws went down. While taken out of context, this particular story will be, oh, well, then you shouldn't be strong. You should not do that. That makes you stiff. That makes you slow. That makes you whatever else. But the fact is, without that 400-pound squat, he never would have been able to throw the discus and the other implements far. You need a certain level of strength. You need to reach at least the point of diminishing returns in your general strength. Where would that point be? Well, I'll give you just a couple of examples. Would be the double bodyweight back squat or bodyweight military barbell press, et cetera, et cetera. Those are not outstanding, remarkable numbers, but those are numbers that are absolutely a must to achieve for most athletes. And until those numbers are achieved, any other focus and training, in addition to skill practice, is just absolutely not justified. So I would say that the mistake that the athletes and coaches make is they underestimate the importance of strength.
Okay, very good, Pavel. Very well stated indeed. Dan, would you like to come up? We've got two terrific kind of mistakes in place that you both outlined in very powerful terms. Do you have another key mistake that you see strength and conditioning coaches making in their approach to athletes these days?
Well, I've heard this many times, but, well, the next phase would be conditioning and more conditioning. You know, you have to be – there are things in life where there are some collision sports and some collision occupations where, you know, you really do have to have the whole system in place. I mean, but the interesting thing, they're so mission-focused that, you know, so if you can't do it, then if you get blown up, broken down, somebody else steps in. But the mistake is, for most of us, we don't need conditioning and more conditioning and more conditioning. And it's like the old joke of, I say this all the time, but I'll get emails from people who want to build up, you know, who want to put on some serious mass, you know, like really big, you know, but they don't want to lose their six-pack. And it's like, you weigh 135 pounds. I mean, you know, you don't worry about your six-pack. Get yourself up to a number that doesn't sound like a supermodel, you know. So I think the other area that we've kind of fallen into lately, John, is this idea, this ramping up. It's taking place. People don't go to the weight room anymore to lift weights. They go in the weight room to do a conditioning workout where they're doing this crazy thing followed by that crazy thing followed by this. If you want great conditioning, go to a local high school and run 400 meters as fast as you physically can. Recover from that and do it two more times. You will be in great condition. And I always joke, and don't worry about diet because you'll be leaving your meals right there on the track. So I think what happens, John, is that the third big era is that now we're in this wave of I'm more conditioned than you. The sad thing about conditioning, this is an observation of mine, is it's a quality that disappears quite quickly. Whereas what's strange about brute, absolute strength, that stuff, I cannot lift literally for years. I've had some issues come up through the past with, you know, I got very ill in the Middle East and things like that. And I couldn't lift for, you know, a while. When I was finally able to lift again, my strength numbers were back in a workout or two. Strength doesn't evaporate like water in Arizona. It stays. But conditioning and more conditioning, that stuff disappears within seconds of in the next 8 minutes, you know. So that would just be another small one, okay?
Well, it doesn't sound small. I mean, it sounds very significant. I may be exaggerating, but it's almost like you're saying when people call themselves S&C coaches, they should really have the S as a capital and the C in lowercase. That at least the approach to conditioning has been to elevate it or misunderstand the type of training that's really needed. I have a thought or a question. We celebrate toughness a great deal in Dragon Door. You know, that's part of who we are, and what we want to promote is being as tough as it's appropriate to be, and we try to help people achieve that. Do you think people are misunderstanding the relationship between toughness and conditioning?
Me, Dan, John? Oh, absolutely.
I can ask you, and then Pavel will probably have some thoughts also.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny for me because, you know, fortunately I grew up at a good time, you know, with my dad was a vet, my brothers were all of them were in the service, two were disabled, you know, from Vietnam, and one, you know, had, was also there, and another, you know, so my house grew up pretty tough. We're all athletes, so
for me, the toughness side came very naturally. But I think what happens sometimes, I think we're in a position now, what some people think is tough and mean, it's simply, you know, you must do the task. I'm telling you something. You want to be tasked by how tough you are? You know, have twins. Have two baby kids. You know, get, you know, if you want to find out how tough you are, raise infants. You never sleep. You rarely eat. You barely can finish a sentence. But to me, that's sometimes, sadly, the first time anyone ever has to stand up for toughness in life. And so I think what we're doing at Dragon Door, I'm not sure toughness is the right word. For me, it's normative behavior that's been kind of lost. You know, you don't always have to be told you're super swell and wonderful. Sometimes you have to earn the right to do something. I'm not sure, within reason, of course. So I mean, that's my statement.
So, but you know, bottom line is that coaches probably hear the mistake is that they're driving people into the ground with unnecessary levels of elongated cardio.
I see that a lot. I'd rather have a team full of guys who can deadlift 500 pounds, squat 4, bench 3, clean 3, you know, versus a lot of guys who can run marathons. That's my own opinion. But I think we'll win more football games and be a little tougher in bar fights. Yeah.
Sure. Pavel, do you want to add anything there?
Absolutely. Great point. Great points, Dan. Toughness, gentlemen, has to be taken in the context. And one has to understand that in addition to developing toughness, you also teach your nervous system and your body to do certain things. I will just give you some examples. Whenever you are going out on a long run, let's say marathon, or just long distance run, and you're pushing yourself hard, and definitely you're tough. There's no doubt that you're tough. But what you are doing is you're teaching your nervous system to take the finite amount of energy that you have and spread it out, you know, as thinly as possible for the longest period of time, which is very, very appropriate for this particular event. And if you choose to try and perform a strength lift or express your power in something like a jump or a throw, you're simply not going to be able to do that, because even though you're trying hard to do that, you have taught your nervous system and you have taught your body to save yourself for later. So you may have become tough in some arbitrary manner, but it's not going to help you in a lot of different, in other events. And one just has to understand that there are different ways of being tough. You know, who's tougher? Is that a marathon runner? Is that a fighter who goes for several rounds of several minutes? Or is that a powerlifter who's fighting a very, very tough deadlift in the third attempt? These are different expressions of toughness. Well, let's use the last example of the powerlifter. A friend of Riff's pulled 733-pound deadlift, got white lights, and it took him, if I'm not mistaken, 15 seconds to complete that lift. 15 seconds. That, to me, is the most insanely crazy feat of toughness that I've ever heard about, because the type of a neural drive that takes to withstand this sort of effort, it's just absolutely unbelievable. So will this gentleman be able to run a marathon? Absolutely not. Will a marathon runner be able to muster enough focus to take all his resources and throw them in just one brief moment of time and focus him there? No, absolutely not. So it's really comparing apples and oranges. Toughness must be developed, but that toughness must be developed with the means that are appropriate for a particular sport or for a particular occupation.
Terrific, Powell. And as both of you have been saying and indicating, the problem is that, it's like you used to say, Powell, fitness for what? Is that
right.
Generally strength coaches are adopting a kind of scattershot approach and not really applying the appropriate strategies to the appropriate athlete.
Well, and there is another point to make here, gentlemen, is it's very easy to smoke somebody.
Yeah.
It really doesn't take a big brain to go and smoke somebody, you know? Just go out and do 1,000 push-ups and 1,000 squats and whatever. That's okay. And later on, oh, I'm so sore, I'm so tired, I had a great workout. But what is the criteria of success right here? Is the performance improving? are you getting closer to your goals? But making somebody stronger, that is a challenge, and that's a task, and it's a very, very objective evaluation. You've lifted more weight or you have not. You know, who cares how sore and tired you are?
Terrific. Dan or Pavel, you want to come up with another key mistake that you see people making these days?
Well, there's a boatload of them. Here's a good example. I mean, we talk about this quite a bit in the lately. I've been talking about, okay, for fat loss, for example, something that's simple. You know, what diet works? Well, we know this. Every diet works. We know this. And what exercise program works? Well, to be honest with you, really, every exercise program works. Now, I personally think that, like on the diet side, something more, you can call it paleo or Atkins or meat-based works better. And I honestly think that swings, goblet squats, push-ups, get-ups work better. But really, it's options. But the thing is, and John, it's so simple in my mind anyway. Just pick one and then do it. And I think what happens is that we are so inundated today with diet, ways of eating, this and that's and this is, that we've kind of lost the way we keep losing our direction, our vision of where we're going on things. Trust me, if you stick to Rob Wolf's paleo diet, just stick to it. Just do what he says to do. You'll do fine. If you decide to do Atkins, you'll do fine. It doesn't matter. But I think what happens is there's so much noise. There's so much more noise now. I've said it many times. You know, Iron Man magazine, the old, not the new one, used to come out once a month, and there'll always be some kind of insane workout. But it only came out once a month, so I could only do something stupid every 31 days. Now, with the Internet, I can literally do something stupid or get faced with a new stupid idea every minute, every second I'm on the web. And so I would say that most people can't deal with the buffet of options. It takes us, think about this. Think about a high school senior. There's this thing called senioritis. And I've argued many times that the problem with high school kids when they're seniors isn't the fact that they have some disease that show up. It's the first time in their life they've had to manage a compromise. And, of course, that's the decision about, should I go get a job or should I go to college? Now, if I go to college, you know, I don't know, was there 25,000 colleges or probably more? And so I have to constantly compromise. And these kids freak out because they've never once in their life had to make a compromise that had such, you know, such life-altering issues. But diet, exercise, just pick one and go with it. And I just go in circles, but I know exactly what I mean, is that we sometimes just have to have the courage to stick with what we're doing. This is the path. And what happens is you get trainers, and I see them online all the time, who will every month offer a new instant product, you know, 21 days of this, 2 weeks of that. And even on their own website, their own blog, they contradict themselves every couple of weeks. Well, you got to only imagine what the person who doesn't do this for a living thinks. So I think in the industry, I think it's nice that the one thing that Easy Strength did for a lot of people is we at least broke it down into four segments. These are four populations. Find the population you fit and then try to follow the people who talk to you, your language. You know, football coaches should talk to other football coaches about things. Dieters should talk to other dieters. And I just think that there's just so much, in political science we call it noise. There's so much noise out there today that people can't find their way. And my thought is, you know, go back to things that, you know, go back to the simplest thing you can. And then, like a true scientist, experiment with one or two variables, one variable at a time. One variable a year, you know. If you decide all you're going to eat is meat and vegetables for a year, and the next year someone says that you need to eat an orange a day, well, then just do that. But, my gosh, if they tell you eat one orange a day and 17 pounds of bagels, it might not work. Okay, enough. That's enough for now.
Dan, maybe if the dieters talked to football coaches, they would be better off than talking to other dieters.
Hey, that's a good point.
Now, you know, one of the a superficial person coming to consider investing in Easy Strength will say, Okay, Dan's just told me that this is very, very simple. Just do some very simple things. And yet this book is 288 pages. What is, obviously there's, this comes back to the simplicity and complexity issue of strength training. People are making mistakes. It's clear that Easy Strength offers some solutions pointing folk from your perspective to the more simple, but it appears that ironically to do that, you've also needed to go into great depth on the complexity that is still out there that's worth paying attention to. How do folk who are coming to the Easy Strength text, how would you say you've addressed the issue of what a particular person should do that is very simple and straightforward in a certain manner, while at the same time giving them the proper understanding of what the actual choices are?
Can I answer that first, Pablo, if you don't mind?
Yeah.
Please, Dan, please.
Okay. About a week ago, Pablo and I were answering questions, and I'll just exaggerate a little bit, but a person raises her hand and says, I have a client who has one leg. How am I supposed to teach him how to goblet squat? And Pavel famously answered, this is a principle-based system. So what used to happen with me, John, and it's my fault because I wasn't bright enough then, people would say, Dan, this NFL guy does this, and it works. And I'd go, right. Oh, okay. And their thought would be, so I should go do that? This, I read about this triathlete who does that. Should that? Yeah, it works. That's a good idea. What about this sprinter who trains like this? It wasn't until really, Pavel and I started working on Easy Strength that I realized that, you know, for certain areas, certain, let's call them quadrants in this example of activity, some things work. But to train a sprinter like you train a football player with, like, agility drills, I've heard of sprint coaches teaching their sprinters with agility drills. At a track meet, no one throws things at you, okay? In the discus ring, they don't roll balls across your feet as you're doing.
Well, it gets better then. They use agility drills for personal training clients in gyms.
Okay, so you have a fat loss client, and you have them stand working on their balance. Well, why don't you get the fat off them? Then let's see if the balance is better. So Pavel and I have the quadrants, and the nice thing about the quadrants, John, is that when you read the book, you kind of should put yourself mentally into one of the quadrants. In fact, I'm working with this team this week, and they had a long conversation about whether Major League Baseball is a quadrant two or quadrant three activity. And I said, you know, it's interesting. Probably early in a career, it's quadrant two. But when that guy, that pitcher's 30, 32, 33, it's definitely a quadrant three activity. Keep him strong, keep him pitching. And they kind of laughed and goes, that they said they came to the same exact conclusion. So the idea of, yes, it's simple, but you also have to have the skill set to realize that, okay, I'm watching the NFL Combine this week, and they're doing all these insane things. They're doing all these insane things to prepare themselves for the Combine. They're not doing those things to prepare themselves for the NFL game. And then when a guy's 29 playing in the NFL, they're not going to be doing that stuff anymore. They're going to probably just doing some mobility, some hypertrophy, and keeping their strength levels at a nice level. And that's really it. Okay, so there. Go ahead, Pavel. I'm sorry.
Well, gentlemen, in Power to the People, I mentioned the term simplexity. Simplexity, it's the arising of some very simple rules out of underlying complexity. Simple does not mean stupid. We could tell somebody to train simply go and do push-ups. Again, this is not going to get the results. The simplicity has to have some foundation. And what we're teaching in Easy Strength is we're giving you a series of simple recommendations that that are based in both empirical and they're both empirically and scientifically based. So we really have refined a lot of material, a lot of work done by researchers, coaches over decades, and in some instances even over a couple of centuries. So simplicity, again, it's arising of the simple rules from underlying complexity. You may not confuse simple with stupid. So that's why this book is long as it is. But seriously, once you do read it, you will understand exactly, this is exactly what you're supposed to do.
Very good, Pavel. It reminds me of, I'll have to paraphrase Einstein's quote, saying, if you're not able to explain something simply, you simply haven't done the work to understand the material properly.
That's exactly it. And as a Russian teacher is complaining to a colleague over vodka at night, he says, you know, these kids are such idiots. I explained it to them once. I explained it to them twice. I explained to them three times. I finally get it, and they still don't get it.
That's perfect. Well,
it's a great reason to be a teacher.
My friend Dave Turner, who was my Olympic lifting coach for a long time in Utah, used to go back into the archives of Strength and Health, and he'd Xerox an article for me to read to show me that no matter all this. It's when the Bulgarian programs were first being done and the Greeks. He showed me that in the 1950s and early 1960s, this was the same thing being done by American lifters. Very simple programs. And the funny thing, and see, Pavel said this stuff is centuries old. I had an athlete said, I've never heard anything like this before. And I said to her, well, this is before. What we're talking about has been the standard way to train, literally before the advent of anabolics. When anabolics showed up, it so distorted strength training, because all of a sudden people could get away with some very odd training ideas. I've heard about people, this one guy bragged that he had to put a gun to a guy's head to make him do the work that it was so hard. Well, you can't train like that. Very long. The training can't be so brutal that you have to use a weapon to make your athlete do it, because that's not going to hold up over a 10, 12, 15 year career. And so one of the things that I always tell people, people think I want to go put on a leopard skin thing and grow a jaunty mustache ye old strongman. But yeah, they had a lot of it right. And the problem is we tossed all of it out when we became Frankenstein training and machine-based training. And so once we got away from the machines, people literally just reinvented a bunch of junk. And so I think Pavel and I stand on a seesaw between what worked 100 years ago and what works now. And there's a bit of a balance there. Okay, so I just want to make sure I mention that.
No, excellent.
And it's interesting that this, what was working before, while some coaches and specialists started recognizing the value of some of the older methods, and also they started recognizing the ineffectiveness of this isolation machine-based training, the pendulum has swung so far that strength got lost in the process. And also, something very fascinating happened with this trend of functional training, so-called functional training. It's a wonderful idea. It's a brilliant idea that was executed absolutely horribly. The premise is very simple. Okay, you need to be able to train the way your body naturally moves, et cetera, et cetera. Some basic movement patterns. This is all wonderful. Now, then you see trainers having their students do planks. Having the clients do planks and hold this plank for, let's say, a minute. Well, that person has a horribly arched back. Their hip flexors are so tight that the hips are flexed. The knees are bent. The shoulder blades are poking out like this is a hungry cow. And this person is holding it for 60 seconds. What they are doing is what Greg Cook would say, they're adding fitness on top of dysfunction. See, Gray is one of the few people who understands functional training the way it's supposed to be. And these fashion functional training, they just see the external appearance of a move. Oh, lunge is wonderful. We should be doing lunges. So again, these people start walking around the gym lunging. they have this absolutely horrendous arch in their lower back. Their pelvis is all twisted. They are their knees are crushed, and they're pretending to be performing lunges. So instead of going to the basics first and understanding how is that that we brace our midsection and how is that that we perform the plank properly, let's address those issues first. Before we learn how to stabilize the body, nothing else is really going to happen. We cannot be adding all this other silly nonsense. And what we do is we go to these basics, we go to this foundation. The RKC plank, the plank as it's taught in the RKC, for instance, the electrical activity in the muscles of the midsection has been measured at to be at 200 to 400% of whatever is noticed in the traditional plank, because we really pay attention to these details. So once you start with this kind of a solid foundation in the first quadrant, and again later on Dan will talk about his brilliant concept of quadrants, then we can proceed and then we can do some other things. But this concept of seeing functional training is, oh, because lunges are good, squats are good, let's lunge and squat, and let's do planks. People are doing this absolutely horrendous, atrocious exercises, and to top it all off, they use no load whatsoever. So they just become really weak and pathetic.
Excellent, Pavel. Excellent.
Can I add one thing? I wouldn't want the audience to miss what Pavel said. Is that he said that strength got thrown out, and I would just to add to what Pavel said is that we start getting ourselves to do, you know, you put your foot up on a Bosu ball, and you have a rubber band in your hand to make it even more unstable. But there's no load, and I think what got thrown out was strength. And I've always felt that if you have an athlete with just appropriate strength loading. Like I always say with the high school lifter, there's just certain numbers. If you get your whole team at that certain number of what I would consider a reasonable strength level, miraculous things happen to your program. If I can get a woman to do goblet squats, just goblet squats and presses, I'm the best fat loss coach in the world in about 3 weeks. And so just almost every answer I have for people, and it's funny in that little article where I've seen on breakingmuscle.com, I joke about lowering taxes by lifting heavier weights. It seems almost one of the, Pavel, you nailed it. We threw, you know, the strength was the baby in the bathwater. You know, we just tossed it off, and we just threw it out. And
what's ironic then, and they still failed to achieve good intelligent movement patterns at the same time. So they failed on both fronts.
Yeah. And, you know, the funny thing is, if we just get, and I tell you, if I took that same person doing that lunge you were talking about and just got their, you know, got a solid goblet squat and a bunch of presses, they would magically master that lunge I asked them to. At least that's what I'm finding, and that's what I'm getting reported back. You know, sometimes I got to be careful about my universal anecdotes. You know, they're not always perfect. You know, this isn't a cure for Black Death, but boy, it sure answers a lot of problems. You know, getting stronger won't stop the bubonic plague yet, but I'm working.
Well, Riff says that strong fixes almost everything.
And the funny thing is, people have to hear almost everything, but you know what? It covers a lot of ground. Get stronger. Okay.
Gentlemen, may I address one more mistake that coaches make?
Oh, please, please.
That's a huge mistake as well. And one extreme, some coaches, strength coaches, they just simply imitate the training of a weightlifter or a powerlifter or, worse yet, a bodybuilder when they're trying to train for a different sport, let's say discus or it's a martial art or what have you. And so this is one extreme. This is imitating the methods of a strength sport, exactly. And the other extreme is their understanding of sport-specific training. And is what they do is they do nothing but loaded variations of their athletic movement. And that's the other extreme, and that's the other mistake. The reason that the first approach is not valid is that every strength sport, you have to understand that something like weightlifting or powerlifting, these are sports. And the goal right there is to lift as much weight as possible. And sometimes that comes, sometimes there's a cost attached to that. Let's use a simple example of the bench press. Arching your back, increasing the arch in the back is going to add a couple of extra pounds to your bench. But to quote one powerlifter, is that, did you get stronger or did you just lift more? Did you get stronger or did you just lift more? So while athletes from strength sports have accumulated at terrific methods for building strength, one has to be very judicious about their use. The same thing about the loading parameters. A popular formula for building strength among Russian powerlifters is just five sets of five. So once a week, just a lifter goes out, does five sets of five of squats with, let's say, 8 minutes or so between each set. Then he's going to repeat that with a lighter weight on a light day. You know, it's a very effective and pretty much foolproof method of building strength. But anybody who has ever done the five sets of five program, and right now I'm talking about the particular variation of five by five where you use static weight, the same weight. Everybody knows that after you've done those five sets of five in the heavy squat, about the only sport that you're able to play for the next several days is chess. You know, maybe darts, but probably not even darts. So chess, this is probably it. So this is the time for you to just sit down with some pizza and recover. So these methods may be effective. They're very effective. But because these are specialist methods, and they leave don't leave a lot of resources for practicing of the sport and for developing of the other qualities. So that's one of the reasons you should not blindly emulate powerlifters or weightlifters. And this is one of the points we'll make in Easy Strength with Dan. So we'll give you a series of these Easy Strength protocols that allow you to get stronger, a lot stronger, while at the same time have the time and the energy to play the sport or just have a normal life. Now, if we go to the other extreme, the so-called sport-specific training is, if we're kicking the ball, then perhaps if we just make the ball heavier and kick it, we're gonna suddenly improve our sport-specific strengths. This is a very dangerous road to take. While this type of training may have its place in a highly experienced athlete's regimen, the coach who is implementing this method has to be extremely experienced. If the movement is loaded in an amateur manner, what's going to be accomplished is just simply the athlete's technique is going to be ruined. That's it. And it's happened time and time again. Like, for instance, you may have heard that Russian boxers punch with dumbbells. So, okay, great, I'm going to start punching with dumbbells. You grab a pair of 5-pounders or 10-pounders and off you go. Well, these are not punches anymore. This is something else. Russian boxers use dumbbells the size of a roll of quarters. This is a very different ball game. And there are different ways of loading a movement. It's a whole science of how to load the movement, how much to load the movement. And seriously, only highly experienced coaches in their particular fields know how to do that. And only fairly high-level athletes can have justification for using these methods anyway. So let's just put it this way. Until you're almost a contender, let's say that you're knocking on the door of competing at the national level, you have no business to do this stuff. At that point, you can find a coach who can show you how. Until then, you just need to do general strength preparation done the way we describe it in Easy Strength, plus practice the skill of your sport. So these are the two mistakes that athletes and coaches make, two extremes they go to, and this is how to resolve this problem.
Excellent, Powell. Excellent.
Can I follow up on that?
Sure. Please, Dan.
John? You know, there's some famous Soviet coaches, track and field coaches, who emigrated up to Canada. And when you read what they do online, it sounds like it's all specialized stuff. And so a lot of coaches, track coaches, have fallen in love with, you know, you take an eighth grade kid. Well, I've talked to a number of the athletes who've gone up and trained with them, and they said, well, what they find with American athletes is that we show up with, you know, the joke is, you know, Mack truck engines on a Volkswagen.
And so the last thing, like the one guy I'm thinking about, needed was any more strength. He had more than enough strength to be the world champion in the shot put. He just needed specialization work. But Pavel, to answer that one point, a lot of people miss the point is to specialize in your training. You really, really have to build a base before you can specialize. Yeah, there should be some, obviously, but it's rare air when all you do is, you know, throw 900-gram javelins for your overload work versus the 800. And people miss that all the time. And so, again, with the Internet and with the information out there, people miss that crucial role of just getting yourself strong on the way up.
Dan, pardon me to interrupt you. This would be John, I hope you don't mind. This would be a great time to introduce Dan's concepts of quadrants and how all these different concepts fit into these quadrants.
Absolutely, yeah. We can absolutely do that. So would you like to, you know, one of the most remarkable concepts in Easy Strength is that of the four quadrants. It's something, Dan, that you remarkably produced, and I think it'd be great, as Pavel says, for you to elaborate what's so special about this concept, and can you help the listeners understand what the distinctions are for the four quadrants?
Sure. Well, you know, of course, I was asked by both of you to give a talk years ago, and this was important because you asked me about the role of the strength coach. Of course, that was, you know, make people stronger. And then Pavel followed up with, well, no, what's the impact? And, of course, that took me years to undo and, you know, to figure out, you know, because the role, the impact of the strength coach really depends. But then as I worked it more and more, I realized that certain things, anything you try has qualities. And as you slide to the right, so to speak, you get more and more and more qualities. But then I also figured as you raised, you went up, the role of just absolute scary strength and the level of quality raises. From there, I came up with this thing called the quadrants. Quadrant one is lots of qualities at a low level. That'd be like a middle school or high school PE class where you're exposed to sports, a new sport every 2 or 3 weeks. Your conditioning is 2 laps, some calisthenics, some mobility. Your weight training might be a hands-on introduction to some things. At the end of the year, you know, you won your PE baseball tournament, and you're the 6-period PE baseball champions. Really, you're not ready to go into major leagues with that. So that's quadrant one. Quadrant two is the sexy one everyone thinks they are. That's collision sports and collision occupations. That would be the tip of the spear in the special forces community. That would be the National Football League. That would be rugby, high-level rugby. It's where you need so many qualities at such a high level that literally at birth, much of it's decided. You, as I always tell people, I'm always the biggest guy in the picture. I'm 2 inches too short and 0.2 seconds too slow to make it the National Football League. I'm smart. I got all the qualities, but I'm not big enough, fast enough. Quadrant three is, this is what I love to make fun of because that's where I'm at. It's the qualities are low level. There's very few qualities, and they're at a low level. But even then, and I use the yin-yang here, a discus thrower, you can get strong any way you want. Say there's 5 ways. There's 5 options. You can Olympic lift, you can power lift, you can do Highland Games, you can do strongman, or you can do power bodybuilding like you find in Beyond Bodybuilding. There's 3 basic discus techniques. Well, you're not going to ever be as strong as an Olympic lifter. You're not going to be ever as strong as a power lifter. But you need to be strong, and you need to have mastery of those. So really, for discus thrower, 2 qualities, strength, technique. But that's it. But you have to be very good at that's it. And then, of course, quadrant four is that rare air, 1 or 2 qualities at the highest level humanity has ever seen. 9,700 meters, 1,000-pound deadlifts, 1,000-pound squats, sneaking up on 1,300-pound back squats, snatching 462 pounds. I mean, that's just stunning. To even think about that. And so what happens is for the bulk of people, they fall in love with quadrant two because that's ultimate fighters in NFL. But most of us are in quadrant three. Now, why does all this help? is once you figure out what quadrant you are, if you say, like, you're an iridiscus thrower and you call me for advice, it allows us to just cut away all the nonsense. I find, I mean, I work with people who do, I can't train anymore, Dan, and I'll talk about what they're doing, and it's nonsense after nonsense after nonsense. You need some flexibility, but do you need to do a Bikram yoga class every day if you're a discus thrower? I mean, do you need to be an elite powerlifter, strongman, and Olympic lifter, and then have the energy to go throw? So for me, what it allowed, it allowed me to say, this is what's important for your given area. Let's play with that. So it really even helped me talk to PE teachers, because they want to know, there's so many things, and you know, I mean, hey, I'm part of the problem. Okay, Dan, should I teach me the Olympic lifts, the power lifts, the kettlebells, clubs, you know, and then the list goes on and on and on. And my response is, now it's more, well, yeah, they should be introduced to it, but please don't expect mastery of the Olympic lifts of a kid who 20 minutes ago was sitting in geometry class, and 25 minutes from that will be sitting in Spanish class. You know, have some reasonableness. So that's where the quadrant comes. Most people are quadrant three. I can, you know, pick a diet, pick an exercise program. Now, follow it. Get back to me in a year. Don't have, you know, and once you understand that, then you can have a reasonable approach, and not just for the next 2 weeks. I'm talking about for the rest of your life, a reasonable approach to how one exercises and how one deals with the role of strength in life. It is true. There's no question that I would always argue be as strong as you possibly can, with the caveat of be as strong as you possibly can within what you have time and realistically can do. So, I mean, I'd love to see Grandma in there doing goblet squats and swinging the bell. That's awesome. But the bell should be appropriate. The load should be appropriate. You know, here's two beasts, Grandma. Welcome to the first day of kettlebell class. You know, that's the second day under my tutelage, okay? So that's a simple overview, but that'll serve for here.
Oh, terrific. And, you know, Dan, you obviously do a brilliant job in Easy Strength of outlining those four quadrants and showing people how to apply them in their lives. Now, this all makes, when I hear you talking about the four quadrants, it sounds like the most incredible common sense. The interesting phenomenon that we've been looking at is kind of almost in a joking way. It's like the strength and conditioning coaches, many of them out there, have been loading up their shotguns and heading out to protect their chickens in the chicken coop, as if the easy strength ideas are like a fox in their chicken coop. We've had some top NFL coaches, strength and conditioning coaches, like you know, from the Cincinnati Bengals, the Atlanta Falcons, the Indianapolis Colts, who consider the book revolutionary and the program revolutionary. Why do you think so many others are afraid of the information that it contains?
Well, let me respond to that. It's funny because I'm sitting down here in Arizona right now. I'm now working with baseball teams. So now I've worked with NFL, NBA, and now Major League Baseball, because the baseball team guys are reading the book and going, this is exact, because those guys are, the baseball guys are even more confused, because, you know, they've pushed weights away for so long and then embraced it, but they embraced it, you know, like putting your mouth on a fire hose style, you know. I think the reason that people who are at the top of the field like it so much is that they kind of nod along, realizing that common sense isn't so common. And they nod along going, I have been there. I've gone to the workshop, and this guy was trying to sell me a $37,000 device to increase vertical jump. But we bought it, and we did it, and we didn't get better, and now we've got this machine that takes up half the weight room, if you follow my point. So all of us have been there, but this isn't a reflection on you, John, but when people summarize my career as, oh, I'm the guy who makes things simple, or I'm the guy who uses common sense, and I always want to look at them and strangle them, because it's like, oh, really? Oh, really? So I just woke up one day and said, oh, I'm just going to drop some fairy dust on everything and just say, make it simple. You know how hard it is to make things simple? You've got to have a lot of... People hate you. People... So I hope that answered the question. But
particularly in this day and age. So the guys with the shotguns hate the extent to which you're making it commonsensical.
Yeah, or you can lock the door to the hen house. It's your call. I don't care which way you do it.
So, that easy strength has many claims, and many have been seeing it as game-changing. Why?
Well, I don't want to jump in too much, but I want to be sure.
Please do that.
But one of the things people are telling me is when they sit back down, they kind of you got to imagine, you got to put your hands on your desk, and then you kind of imagine you see these people literally push their hands away from themselves. I've seen this several times. And you can almost see the clutter and clarity. The clutter disappear from their brain and the clarity of what's left. So that's why it's game changing. It's all of a sudden I gave you permission to bench press twice a week, squat once and deadlift once. And if that's what you need to do, that's what you do. And the nice thing is they look at you and it's almost weepy. That's all? Yeah, that's all. And then what do I do the rest of my time? Well, do your specific sport or be a better neighbor or, you know, take care of business. You know, write the great American novel.
I love that, Dan. I think that very great teachers have that ability to give permission from a position of authority that people understand what they really have to do. Powell, do you have any comments yourself about why?
Yes, John. I think what Easy Strength does is, again, it finally defines the role of the master quality of strength, the master quality in an athlete's preparation, and it answers the question exactly how to approach it at every stage in an athlete's career. And as Dan mentioned, this is true not just for athletes, people who are competing in sports, but just even for somebody who's just simply pursuing a healthy lifestyle and doesn't want to waste his time doing stupid things in the gym. So it's, again, defining the role of the master quality and answering how to address training it at every stage of one's preparation, in one's athletic career.
Excellent, Powell. Yeah, I think that was one of the points I was going to, if there's an objection from lay people that might come up with this program, I think you just answered it, but you might want to elaborate, is that easy strength on the surface to the casual person just considering investing in the program and in reading it and absorbing the material might think, well, this appears to be a book for coaches who are training athletes. This isn't for me. I think I know your answer, but what would you say to them?
Well, I think this goes back to the same question, John, that you mentioned, that the question I would ask in a seminar, fit for what? You want to be fit for what? And there are people who are just simply want to be in good shape, whatever the heck that means. And the fact is that what they're looking for general physical preparation. And again, the cornerstone of general physical preparation is general strength development. And what we give to the reader in this book is the methods that are the easiest, the least time and energy consuming. So the person who simply wants to, I just want to be a lot stronger than, a lot stronger than most guys around me or most guys in the gym. I don't want to live in the gym. I want to look good, feel great, and be able to, go on a great hike or play a game of football or whatever it is on the beach on the weekend or something like that and just be ready for that sort of thing. And I just don't want to live in the gym. I don't want to keep reading nonsense on the internet and change my program every minute. I don't want to keep getting hurt. I don't want to keep taking exotic supplements and look for exotic equipment. So that just simplifies your answer, how to be what you call being in shape in a simple manner.
Very good.
And if I can just add one of the books that really changed my life was Phil Maffetone's book, Everybody is an Athlete. And that thing resonates still in my head with the idea that yeah, it may. Everybody either should have a strength coach or should be their own strength coach. If you know, they got to be careful about that. But I don't know of a person who shouldn't do. I've never met a person who couldn't benefit from basic strength training. I never have. No matter what your goal is, no matter what you're trying to accomplish, basic strength training should be part of what you do. It's like walking. It's something that's just something we humans need. So I would say that why not, if you need to lift weights, why not take care of it the simplest, most effective way? Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Now, one of the sections in Easy Strength that a lot of folk were very attracted to, that I think it's worth spending some time on here, is what, Dan, you called body armor building as opposed to bodybuilding. And you can see immediately, particularly the full contact athlete is going to find this very appealing, because who doesn't want to build up their body armor? Who wants to go into a firefight without his Kevlar on, as it were? The body armor building section of Easy Strength is golden material, no question at all. And we saw when you two gentlemen did your original seminar that this was of immediate interest to the participants, and they kind of got it in a big way, and it's continued to have great appeal. What is the distinction, Dan, between what you're calling body armor building and traditional bodybuilding, which is usually the approach that strength coaches adapt for their sport training?
Well, you know, back in the day, people used to call bodybuilding muscle spinning, which is kind of a funny word. But what I was picking up is that a lot of my athletes enjoy doing 5 sets of 10 with the easy curl to pump their biceps up. And then we'd get in a football game, and someone would bury their helmet on their bicep, and that 5 sets of 10 with the easy curl bar didn't carry over to the field. In fact, it still hurt. Oddly, when I started adding, there was a couple movements I started adding. One was the double kettlebell clean and double kettlebell front squat workout. And so we would do all these different combinations of those two moves. And, you know, what was interesting is that we would then play, and it was like whatever happened with that high intensity, high squeeze, your body becomes more resilient, more can hit in the wall with my hand. That's not going to carry over well to an interview like this. But it seems you can take impact better. You know, it's, for example, you know, one of the reasons I like get-ups is that you roll